your 2024 Amazon Marketing Strategy Primer. That's what I'm hoping this episode of Return on Podcast can be for you. Get a great conversation coming up here with Spencer Padways, the founder of Search Nature, which is a kind of a holistic, media advertising marketing agency in the Amazon and e-commerce space. I really enjoyed this conversation with Spencer. He's a great guy. He's got lots of ideas around driving your brand strategy. And, you know, hey, we get into a little bit of rugby and college football as well towards the end of the podcast. So I think you're going to like this episode. It's hopefully slammed packed with interesting nuggets, advice, tactics that you can take away as you plan your marketing strategy for 2024. Before we dive into the episode, just a quick reminder again. Return on Podcast is always brought to you by Seller Accountant. Hey, that's my accounting firm. I know this is a shameless plug, guys, but this is the time of year. You're coming to the end of 2023, or maybe you're even listening to this in the first week of 2024, and it's time to get your books in order. Your tax guy is waiting. You don't want to wait until the last minute. You want to get things done the right way. You want to get them done in a way that doesn't consume and dominate your life. And you want them to be ready if you're ever going to sell your business, to have those investor grade financials. You're also tired of not making the kind of money you wanted to make. And so bringing on a team like Seller Accountant to take care of the bookkeeping headache, and then beyond that, help you as a fractional CFO, plan your cash flow, understand your channels, understand your SKUs and ASINs. Now's the time to pull the trigger, guys. We'd love to partner with you as we go into 2024. Reach out to us. Go to selleraccountant.com to learn more. Let's dive into the episode. It's time to maximize profitability and cash flow. It's time to learn habits and hacks from the best e-com CEOs. It's time for Return on Podcast with me, Tyler Jupka. All right. Welcome to today's episode of Return on Podcast. And today, as I said in the intro, I'm excited to welcome my new friend, Spencer Padway. Spencer's the CEO, the founder of a couple of companies that are doing great things right now. SearchNurture.com is one of the outfits, and then ProjectFBA.com is the other one. Spencer, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Tyler. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You got it, dude. You got it. All right. So, Spencer, listen, one of the things that comes up in Return on Podcast often is like this journey from J-O-B to building a company. You've built a few now. You're like dangerously close to being a serial entrepreneur with your journey selling one agency and then building another one here. Like, what was going on? What went wrong in your life 15 years ago where you said, you know what, I'm unemployable. I need to start a company. Like, what was going on, man?
Yeah, well, great question. It's funny because I think it was long before 15 years ago. I was never a real kind of system thinker. School was always hard, you know, sitting in a room, listening to people. I've always just kind of treated my life very differently. And so graduating from college, my family is a history of entrepreneurs as well. So, you know, graduating from college, I came out and my goal was not like, oh, I need a job. It was like, what company do I start? And at that age, there was just a beautiful level of confidence and naivete where I was like, anyone can start a company. It's easy. There's nothing hard about this, which makes it great because you don't have the anxiousness or fear. So I happen to have graduated in finance during the financial collapse. So I immediately shifted all the way over and I heard about something called SEO. And back then it was 2009. It was very new. You know, the sales pitch wasn't why do you need this agency? It's why do you need SEO at all? Nobody had really heard of it at that point. I went to what I think was maybe the first or second MozCon. I think it might have been the first MozCon in Seattle. Learned about SEO, came back, and just said, you know what? I'm starting an SEO agency. And so I did that. I ran that for a few years. Sold that to a company called SellPoints. Ran their performance marketing division for a few years. And then, as they got acquired, I left and started my own agency again, Search Nurture, kind of based on, you know, I really had that strong entrepreneurial desire of, I think my value set is different. The way I like to work is a little different. And so I wanted to create a company that enabled people to really live their lives their way, like kind of enjoy their work. You know, we were flexible hours and remote work pre-COVID, really innovative in that sense, like a lifestyle business that not just for my lifestyle, for everyone's lifestyle, while also, you know, giving our clients a great lifestyle with growth and results and everything like that. We're about 7 years in now. It's been great.
Spencer, I think that's what impressed me when I was just doing research and getting to know you a little bit before we got on this this meeting to record this podcast is I do get the sense that your team is different, that you guys have really leaned as far in as you possibly can towards creating an engaged culture, to not just paying lip service to things like quality of life and stuff like that. And I really respect that. It's something that we're trying to do here at Seller Accountant as well. Like, I'm just curious, like, for companies out there that are looking to level up the way they drive culture, like, what are some of the nuggets of advice that you would give them that have really helped you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I get this question a lot. One of the things I think is funny is I often go to conferences, and a lot of the questions I get from sellers aren't about advertising. They're like, okay, how do we make a good remote culture? How do we do these different things? And I think one of the biggest answers that I have to this is that when I started my first company, I kind of went in there and I thought, okay, what are the values of a company? Right? I looked them up on Google. I was looking at HubSpot's values, everyone else's values, and go, ah, those look like good values. Those seem like corporate values. But at the end of the day, like, your company is going to be a reflection of yourself. So if you're the CEO, the leader in the company, it's always going to be a reflection of yourself. And you really need to tap into yourself and understand what are your values, because those then need to be the values of the company. Everyone's going to follow your example. Even if you write down some values, they're going to see what things make you happy or unhappy, and they're going to adjust to that. And so really, especially in, you know, our size business is a little bit more small business when you're talking, you know, somewhere between whatever, 10 to 50 people, it's truly a reflection of yourself. And so if you want to find that good culture and build that good culture, you really have to lead the way. You have to find yourself, make sure that those values work, and make sure that you're living those values so that when everyone else sees you, you know, enabling those things, it works. I know one of the biggest things my team says very often is things like PTO is an interesting example, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's PTO in companies, especially like, you know, when SaaS made unlimited paid time off really popular, where people in these companies are like, wow, that's really, it doesn't work that way. You know, they say you can take as much time as you want off as long as your job is still done, but I can't take time off because my job is never done. Right. So building things like that, like for me, guilt-free time off is always, that's a big principle for me, is when I take time off, I want to reset. I'm not going to reset if I'm guilty the whole time that I'm missing work. So I know people love things like that, where they come to me and say, hey, my kid's got a field trip. Can I take 2 days off and chaperone them? It's like, oh, yeah, of course. That sounds great. You know, as long as, you know, everything's covered, have fun. And it feels good all the way through.
Yeah, because I think for me, by the way, I love that answer. Like, the most expensive mistakes that I've made as a CEO are people mistakes, like on all sides of that monster, right? Either bringing on the wrong people or losing the wrong people or encouraging the kind of leadership amongst my middle managers that I didn't like. So all sorts of things related to your team. And here's my point. My point is that the who's, the people in our companies are actually, like, it's not just trite, like, they actually really matter. It's really important. And so anyway, I admire the way you've built your company, Spencer. I really think it's something I'm trying to learn still. You know, now I'm probably similar to you in terms of the number of years in this entrepreneurial journey. So, hey, listen, let's talk about e-commerce for a minute. So people sell shit online. It used to be easier. It's a little harder now. And we're trying to figure out how to do this, Spencer. And we're trying to scratch out a living, bro. And it has not been easy here in 2023. What have you seen as you're managing brands on Amazon and other kind of media plays? What's working for brands right now that should have our attention?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a few different things that are going on right now. One is, it's very popular. You know, the 4-hour work week, working from home, COVID, there's more brands and more products than ever, and it's more accessible than ever. So the market is more crowded. And in that crowded market, I think everybody needs to stand out a little bit more. And one thing that I see is a lot of founders of e-coms, a lot of sellers, they start because they either love their product, they know how to make something unique, they know how to build that up, and they start getting distracted. You know, they get distracted with accounting or running their Amazon ads or doing all these other things. And I know the pain as a founder. I always want to do everything. I want to learn every single thing. I want to run every single function. But when I do that, I kind of miss my shining star, right? What am I really good at? And I think that for sellers is really important, is that if you're good at product, you're good at creating something interesting, like, try not to overload yourself with other distractions, other things, and make sure that you're focusing on maintaining the quality of the product, making sure that product is still unique, that it's represented well online. And then letting those other functions that aren't the specialty, aren't the manufacturing, aren't those kind of things, you know, be handled by other people. Because I think it's really important in a fairly saturated market to make sure that you have a certain standard of either quality or innovation. If you're just doing, you know, the same run-of-the-mill product, it's going to be really tough to do the marketing, even if you're great at it.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm hearing you saying there, Spencer, is it's hard to out-market a bad like product, right? I mean, so you do have to address a problem for customers. And then I guess I don't know whether to take this in that direction because that doesn't feel good if I'm a seller, if someone's just like, hey, your product sucks. But sometimes that's actually really true. Like you just need to, hey, it may be time to go design something. But let's assume that our product has some product market fit. There's a customer that cares. Is there anything that your team is finding that is changing or is working better or worse than it was a year ago in terms of getting those products to move?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the universal change, both on Amazon and anywhere else that you're selling right now, is the proliferation of advertisements. And I think everyone has seen this every year, every moment. My team and I went to Amazon Unboxed maybe a month, 2 months ago, and the whole conference was like, see this new type of advertising. We got this new type of advertising. We can advertise here. We can advertise there. And the way that Amazon has structured this and most retailers have followed is that when you're looking at your organic rankings on these sites, they're predicated on a few things, right? It's going to be reviews. It's going to be returns. It's going to be your content. But it's also going to be sales. It's going to be sales because Amazon wants to rank the thing where they're making money and where it's selling the most, which makes sense. If you're searching for something, you want to put the most sold product there. Of course, those sales are also driven by advertising. And if you look at Amazon from 2017 to Amazon today, you look at the same category page. Back then, it was organic all the way. And now it's you've got your store ad, your brand ad. You've got your sponsored products. You got a little more sponsored product. You have Amazon's choice. And so there's a necessity now that you have to advertise if you want to win those. And so the approach that I like to take is try to find the most specific niche for that product. Make sure that you're advertising there. Make sure that you're selling your product there. And try to win the advertising because then you win the organic. And once you've done that, you can slightly expand that niche or do one more niche. And as long as you're winning that specific niche in sales, then you're going to be able to keep growing. But the reality today for me is that if you're not running advertising, you're not going to be able to compete in a lot of the terms because anyone that is running advertising is likely going to outsell you. So it's really important to keep your eye on that ball and that Amazon has very successfully made advertising a necessity to grow your brand on Amazon.
Yeah. And so it's made it really difficult. So CFO boy here for a second, Spencer, like one of the challenges is helping our brand owners, I guess, kind of build a cohesive strategy, right? You're going to have to take it on the chin a little bit to buy the real estate, especially if you have repurchasable products. You may have a higher cost of acquisition that you can pay initially to get that done. But then helping our marketing partners like you guys, or like helping our brand owners understand how to like pivot or kind of merge that launch strategy with an actual like, listen, guys, we can't afford to spend 30 points on ads forever, right? We're gonna run out of gas here and be dead. Like, what advice do you have for kind of an average $1 million Amazon seller trying to like toe the line between aggression, launch strategy? There's a ton of competition for ads, and I'm gonna have to compete versus why the hell did I just work 3,000 hours last year to pay Bezos and not me at all? Like, how do you manage that tension?
Yeah, it's a tough balance, right? It's a tightrope walk. And that's kind of the challenge. And that's why I talk about like, all right, let's start with a niche. Part of the reason I talk about starting with like a very specific niche when you're advertising is because it's going to be cheaper. You can win that. You need less total budget. And it's kind of a back and forth of, okay, now that we're selling more, we can spend a little more. Now that we're spending a little more, we can sell a little more. And so it builds on itself. But I think it's really important to not just understand ROAS, right? A lot of people look at the advertising and say, okay, this is our return on investment. You know, there's more and more metrics all the time. Originally there was, you know, Amazon's ACOS, and then there was the popularized tacos, and there's more complex things which include, you know, especially talking about your CFO hat, not just the dollars that you're putting into advertising and getting out, but what's the total effect of that? Both, okay, what do my organic rankings look like when I'm advertising? So there's some free sales involved there. Also, you know, what are my Amazon fees, my manufacturing fees? What does it actually make sense to put into this, you know, Amazon advertising to grow? And so it takes a very extraordinary amount of awareness and research to make sure that whatever you're spending on is actually benefiting you. And to your point, you know, that you're not just breaking even on Amazon fees you know, paying Amazon and selling a product without being able to profit and grow yourself.
Makes sense. Yeah, it really makes sense. And it is a challenge. I think that's a good answer, because I think maybe my takeaway here, Spencer, and what I'm hearing you saying is that, guys, when we launch new products, it's not going to be acceptable anymore to just toss it up against the wall. We're going to have to be more intentional. We're going to have to use kind of a broad array of KPIs that measure impact on sessions and conversions. And then we do, it's something that was hidden in what you said a minute ago, Spencer, is we actually at some point have to determine, how much is that keyword actually worth? Like, is there enough, is the juice worth the squeeze to buy that real estate? Because if I have a product that I have really, really crappy margins on, like it's costing me 50% to get the product from China and get it into the States, I ain't going to be able to compete much and get, it's not going to work. I'm going to get myself in trouble. And I think we've had some sellers who have been so white knuckled over, like, this is my baby. This is my product. I built this. I love this product. When maybe they need to focus on the green one instead of the red one. And so anyway, I think that's my takeaway, Spencer, is that the we got to get better at using data, and we have to be intentional with our spend. And then you said something else, and I want to continue talking about focus here, but talking about the idea that in a world that's more competitive, we got to pick fewer battles, and we got to win those freaking battles, right? When the world's wide open, I can fight 29 battles and I'm not going to be dead if I, you know, have any issues. But when it's competitive, man, fighting a two front war is a way to lose. And so talk a little bit more about that. Like, what does it look like for brand owners to focus on what they do best, or any counsel or advice to them that you've learned along the way here?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I think there's multiple points to focusing on what you do best, right? The first one is, like, you know, let's look at coffee. If you're on Amazon and you came up with a type of coffee, and you're just bidding on coffee, you're going to be up against Pete's, you're going to be up against Starbucks, you're going to be up against things that have infinite budgets, and it's going to be really, really impossible to compete with. But you likely got into your product because you have some kind of passion, some kind of uniqueness to that product. And so really lean into what makes your product different, especially on these, you know, online shelves. People are just going to see your quick headline. So what is it about your coffee that makes it special? Can you target that keyword? Is there a market for that keyword? Can you research that? And that's what I'm talking about when I'm saying, like, you need to focus on your product and make sure it's unique, because you can't win in a niche if there's nothing niche about your product. If it's a generic coffee and you can only bid on coffee, you're probably not going to be able to really compete with the big boys. It's how do you make sure that you can, you know, drill a little hole here and another one here. And the second part of that, I think, relates more to a market trend that I've been seeing lately, which is sellers and vendors have had a real migration over the last maybe year or so. From, okay, I want an agency that, you know, can do this for me too. I want an agency that is specialized in what I do, right? They can show me some kind of results, that is holistic. They're not just looking at, okay, I'm not your ad manager anymore. They don't just want something that goes in and adjusts bids. They want something that understands the business, can help optimize everything, can help understand the true business goals, even outside of Amazon, can integrate that, can take data from the website, from Google, right? And be able to consolidate those services into kind of one location, one area. Because I think the big impetus for that is that when you have four different agencies, or, you know, you have four different companies, you're spending a lot of time talking to each person about each thing and playing telephone. And that takes up a lot of time. You know, it takes up a lot of founder time and a lot of founder mental energy that could be otherwise spent on looking at those niches and understanding the market and building the products. So, you know, it's really just a respect for your own time and value of saying, okay, I need to make sure that whatever partner I have is taking the least of my time with the most efficiency, which means that they need to have the most information so I don't have to be that central source all of the time. Yeah. So I think a mix of those two.
I think that's good, man. I think that's really, wow, that's really interesting. So at one point in there, you mentioned something about kind of what you see on the horizon, what's happening next. I'm just curious, broad question here. I don't even know where you would take this, but what do you think is next over the next hill for Amazon sellers and online brand owners over the next 2 years? Like, what's your prognostication of where you see the market heading?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think a lot of where it's going to head is going to be kind of similar to where it is right now, which is, you know, more saturation. The market keeps growing, which is impressive. You know, Amazon's lion's share is not seeming to go anywhere. And so I think a lot of it is really continuing the same path and trying to build that foothold, trying to find that unique piece. And some of it may not be Amazon specific as well. One thing that we've seen, talking about specialization, one thing that I've seen is not just specialization in agencies and things like that, but even specialization in retailers. You know, if you're selling furniture, Amazon may not be the number one place to go. We see a lot of people saying, oh, we have furniture, we want to go to Wayfair, or, you know, we have home goods, how do we advertise on Home Depot? You know, Amazon's not the only marketplace out there. And so we've been focusing on Amazon on that product niche, but there's also an audience niche. How do you find your audience in the right place and make sure that, again, you're a little bit less saturated, a little bit less competition, or just more focused on people that are looking to buy your product? So it makes that marketing easier and it makes that growth easier. And where it goes is it all works together. If somebody goes and searches for hardware on Amazon and then sees the same hardware on Home Depot and sees the same hardware on Wayfair, you get that brand growth and you get more of those impressions. You're going to get that higher conversion just because you're being seen everywhere. So I think those are some of the trends, is that Amazon will continue to get tougher, more advertising focused. And there will be other places to play and grow, especially if you're, you know, one of these smaller seller businesses where a small percentage of the market is still a pretty big deal.
Yeah. I mean, listen, guys, I just agree with what Spencer is saying here. I mean, the Amazon's not going anywhere. The fact that Amazon can generate, even now, even in a crappy year, kind of 5-to-1 return on ad spend kind of efficiency over a dollar you could put into Meta or Google or, you know, anything else, any other channel for advertising. And yet I think we're going to have to get better at understanding a couple of arcs. By the way, I want to pull these together for us, Spencer. You mentioned at the beginning of our discussion about having a clear brand identity and understanding who you are, what your values are, what you stand for, what matters, why you exist. And taking that to the next step is to understand your customer's journey and what she cares about, what her problems are, what her emotions are. And then to what you just said, which is kind of the culmination of saying, where the hell does she hang out? Where can I find her where she is going to feel the need that my product solves, like that kind of thing. And so I think it's going to be incumbent upon us going into 2024 and 2025 and beyond to be a little bit more thoughtful with the way we're building our catalogs and with the way we're doing our advertising. To your point, we've had several brands that sell furniture that didn't really make a lot of money on Amazon. But as soon as we moved them into Wayfair, the audience was a better fit. Similarly, if you're selling certain kinds of products, you just need to have a dealer network and go out and do wholesale orders to other retailers that are in your neighborhood. But it is always easier to find a niche that'll carve out margin for you if you have a cause that matters to people. And so I think that's one of the things, again, that I find attractive about you, Spencer, is this idea that, first of all, we're going to lead with who we are. This is what we believe. This is our why. This is a kind of Simon Sinek or Donald Miller brand story. This is who we are, our essence. And that essence drives us to act in a certain way, and it makes us very attractive to certain customers. So anything else about that? Anything else about what you see in the future here?
No, I think that's a lot of it. It's just going to be keeping up with, you know, what's interesting, what's popular, what appeals to you, and those trends. You know, everything is always shifting. People always want something kind of new and interesting. You know, coffee was really big. Then mushroom coffee has gotten a lot. And now people like yerba mate. And so there's so many ways to say, OK, how can we tweak our product either slightly or in a big way that's going to make us, you know, more specific, stand out, and be something that people are connecting with, not just buying, but saying, oh, this is the product I want.
Yeah. So good. So good, Spencer. All right, man. So, man, there's so many human things I'd like to talk to you about here, but I want to talk about your businesses for a second. So, you know, you've got your two kind of interrelated businesses, both related to helping e-commerce brands thrive. Here's my question. The person listening to our show right now, listening to this conversation, who needs to reach out to you immediately, stat, they're feeling this, they're dealing with this. What does that person look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So two businesses, right? Two different kind of personas there. The first is, you know, Search Nurture is my marketing agency. It's a holistic e-commerce focused agency. So if you're at the point where you've got your product, you know, you're listed on retailers, you're ready to grow and you have some traction, but you want to go to that next level, either through advertising or building out your organic presence. That's where Search Nurture helps you. We can come in, we'll manage you. We've grown so many small brands into big brands over, you know, 5 or 6 year periods. We love being really strong long-term partners. And so if you're at that point where you're starting to dabble in advertising, maybe you put some money in and it didn't quite work and you're ready to say, okay, I want to bring in some experts to really make this work and grow and help, you know, pull those insights, build my strategy. That's where Search Nurture comes in. We really do that holistic partner approach. We want to learn everything about your company. We want to talk to your employees, your salespeople, whatever you have, so that when we get to the advertising, it's not just an ad manager. A lot of companies will say, okay, we can manage your ads. That's only going to take you so far. It's just, you know, just adjusting bids, doing those things. So I think that's one, that Search Nurture is when you want to grow and you want help. That's what that's there for. And the other site that you mentioned is projectfba.com, which is a resource that we built for sellers to help them grow. And it's a lot of how-to content. It's a lot of tool reviews, tool recommendations. So if you're still at more of that DIY phase and you want to learn all about how to do this yourself, wonderful resource to go in there. And even if you want to use, you know, Helium 10 or Jungle Scout, one of those platforms that can help you, there's a lot of coupons and deals. We're partners with those companies, so we can help you find the right tool set or the right people to help you grow your company without the necessity to learn and do everything yourself.
Got it. I love it. Guys, you need to check that out. We'll make sure that the links for Spencer's companies are in the show notes here. Hey, Spencer, listen, we need to have a really important discussion here. Rugby. You're a rugby guy. How does that happen? Like, I'm just curious. Like, is this just like a out West thing? Like, how does one become a rugby guy? Is that just like at your high school?
Yeah, that was actually at my high school. I was on the crew team here, the Oakland Strokes. And my sophomore year of high school, our math teacher started a rugby team. It was, I think, the first time I'd even heard of rugby, but I was like, I have to go play this sport. It looks amazing. I played it. I loved it. You know, I was 135 pounds. He wouldn't even put me in the game for like 6 months. First time I got in the game, went straight in for a try, and I was hooked. So, you know, bulked up a little bit from there, quite a bit, and played for about 12 years. I ended up playing through high school, CU Boulder, and then for BA Baracus in San Francisco. And, you know, I'm a little bit older now, so I'm not quite in shape for tackling, but I still play in a touch league in Oakland, which is really fun.
Right. I mean, so I'm here on the opposite side of the country here, about an hour east of Atlanta. And I got to tell you, like, college football is a big deal here, Spencer. Rugby is like, I played a lot of football growing up. I just have a respect for rugby. I've never actually really played it. And how cool is it that you get to kind of help launch that team and then play in college and beyond? So listen, I'm going to give you guys a little inside baseball, and then we're going to land this episode with Spencer. I mean, we want to be respectful of your time. But this is the week, Spencer, speaking of sports, where my beloved Bulldogs play Alabama this Saturday in the SEC Championship. By the time this episode releases, I'm either going to be deeply depressed about the outcome of that game. It'll end a 29-game winning streak that my Dogs have had, you know, or I'm going to be insufferable because we will have set a new record and have 30 straight wins, and we will be going to the college football playoff. And it doesn't, I don't know. It's probably good that you're talking to me now, because I'm going to be insufferable either way, Spencer. I'm either going to be insufferable because I'm depressed. I've been drinking too much. I don't take care of myself. I don't shower anymore. Or because I just think I'm, you know, Captain American, can do no wrong. And by the way, I have no part in playing this game. I'll just watch it. So anyway, man, that's kind of what I have going on in my life. I mean, in terms of like, do you follow Bay sports? Are you into the local teams there at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Less so, you know, the Las Vegas Raiders and now the Las Vegas A's. So unfortunate news on both of those. Still a huge Niners fan. Okay. Really looking forward to the Niners-Eagles game this weekend. And of course, you know, we talked a little bit about this, but Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffs, really excited to see what happens there. If nothing else, it's interesting.
Oh, man, it's definitely like, it is like, that is absolutely fascinating. Well, Spencer, the last thing I always ask my guests, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, but I'm going to ask you about habits that have really been meaningful for you in your life. So listen, I'm promising our audience that they're going to get a return on the investment, an ROP, return on this podcast. And the best way for me to guarantee that, Spencer, is to ask you, is there something that you do as part of your routine, personal, professional, a habit, a hack, a practice that you would say gives you an unfair advantage or a great return on investment? Anything pop in your mind when I ask you that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to say that the return is unfair, but there's a few things that I do. I tend to be go, go, go. I'm always doing something. I'm always pushing something. You can kind of see that in my multiple businesses. And so one of the most important things for me is to take time to slow things down. And I do that in a few ways. I like to take a walk every morning. But the one that I would insist upon the most is meditating every day. I kind of look at meditation as like the gym. I love going to the gym. I love lifting weights. I love getting my body in shape. And that's exactly what meditation is for the mind, right? It's kind of your brain gym. You're sitting there and you're practicing not letting things bother you. You're sitting there, you're practicing like just being calm, being yourself, tapping in. And I think it's really necessary to do that every day, because in a world right now where we have phones, we have things, everything's trying to get inside of our heads. It's more important than ever to be able to say, ah, this isn't important right now. I don't need to address this. I don't need this to control my feelings. And so, yeah, sitting down, I like to do 20 minutes a day of guided meditation, and just making sure that I'm building that neuroplasticity for, you know, the emotions and the emotional state that I would like to be in, instead of just being go, go, go anxiety all the time.
Beautiful. I love it. A particular app you use that you'd recommend?
I don't know if I'd recommend it. I use Headspace. I probably have like, you know, 10,000 minutes or more in that app. It's an insane amount. And I'm stuck on it. I haven't really tried anything else, but I like it. It certainly does the trick for me.
I feel like Headspace has probably dominated the market enough that the good thing about being a part of the market leader is that they've, I continue to hear good things about that app. So very good. Hey, exactly. Spencer Padway, Search Nurture, and the other company, projectfba.com. Buddy, thank you for joining ROP today. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to talk about this stuff. And, you know, it's always interesting to talk about, yeah, where the market's going, how people can win. Always enjoy this. So thanks for having me on.
You got it, Spencer. Well, guys, if you want to learn more about Spencer's companies or how his team might be able to help you, or if you're in particular attracted to companies that really want to live out their values and want to create good while they're doing great, we're going to make sure that Spencer's links and the access to his websites and stuff are in the show notes. Reach out to him. He'd love to talk to you. And I just want to close this episode like I always do with gratitude. Thank you so much. I can't believe you. It's been 30 minutes of your energy, of your life with me and with Spencer. We hope that this episode has given something to you that you can take away, apply. And so until we see you next week here on Return on Podcast, we hope you kill it. Take care. Cheers.